This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
At night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
What's going on, everyone? It's the True Jordy. I fucking hate the championship.
The sound of the first 60 minutes against Newcastle. But then the Villa players decided to get funky.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Well, if any game epitomised the saying to hell and back, Villa versus Newcastle for Villa fans certainly was up there. We'll take a look in the show at, well, the two sides of the coin, the first woeful 60 minutes or so, and then the flip side where Villa launched a sterling comeback. We'll also look at some of the other news of the week, notably the latest episode in the Jack Grealish saga. The improver of the week will be Mr. Gallini, who actually had a decent game for what he had to do against the Geordies. We'll have a Jedi Axe Jungle. There'll be another little silly sketch as well, which is topical to the events of the week. Of course, five reasons to be cheerful as Villa fans, and a whole lot more. As always, thanks for the new patrons that have signed up, and if you want to do so as well, which will be a huge help in expanding the show, because we've got a few ideas in the pipeline, just head on over to myoldmansaid.com and click on Patron, which you'll find on the top menu bar. Also, if you're if you've got a local business in the Midlands area and you fancy sponsoring the show, and obviously as well as the show listeners, we can also plug you on our social media channels and the website. So you reach thousands and thousands of Villa fans. Drop me an email on david@myoldmansaid.com and we can discuss it further. Mates rates, of course. Right, let's get on with it and discuss what potentially is a very pivotal game in Villa's season. And joining me on the show, Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground. Welcome, Dan.
Good evening.
Right, before we go on to the positives of the game, and it was a good point, and Villa fans were pretty joyous at the end of it, because we'd pretty much pulled that one out of the fire, let's discuss the almost tragic first hour of that game. I don't think I've been as mad and angry at a Villa performance since the FA Cup final against Arsenal in 2015. I mean, we had to watch a lot of dross last season, but we kind of got acclimatised to that. But it's just when you really need a performance from a team and it lets you down in that way. Not only the players on the pitch, but you know, the managerial decisions as well. I think there's nothing more frustrating for a football fan. So let's pick the bones out of the wreckage of that first hour or so. Dan, Di Matteo, what was he playing at?
God. It wasn't doing anything really, was it? It was the most disjointed. I mean, let's just look at the first half first. I mean, I was sat in the lower hole and you think, well, it can't possibly get any worse. And it was just the most excruciating attempts to see us trying to fathom anything. And it got to the point as the game progressed as well where you thought, actually, there is no plan here. And it descended almost into farce. You know, people, you know, we sat with people, we were just laughing. It was that bad. It was that bad.
At the moment, we've bought these players, and as you know, I've said before, it looks good on paper, these players. Oh, they've won the championship. Oh, these guys, they gave up the Premier League to come to play for Villa, etc., etc. And there's no game plan. It's like, well, we'll throw them on. They're not even playing in their...
Not in their positions.
Best positions, no. Either. Exactly. People were getting angry, and it wasn't... It's not frustration. It's not Villa trying everything, hitting the post, you know, really having a good go as the home team should. It was just, it was maddening. And, the anger was flowing. If we had lost that game, it would have been, I think, a bit of a turning point for old RDM.
It was so easy. I mean, we're looking at a Newcastle team that has Jonjo Shelvey in it, and he looked like Beckenbauer. You know, it was just a joke. It was so frustrating because... I think we can all see the little technical and the improvements in the personnel. Yeah, they're not world beaters, but it's a million miles away from where we were. They look so disjointed. Like, as you say, it can be so damaging because you get onto a bad run or you get turned over against someone like Newcastle, and you're glum and you're wondering where the next win's going to come from. Well, we need to be building some sort of momentum, not wondering how are we going to win games. We've got the personnel now, I feel, to win games.
Let's put it into some context. Newcastle weren't that good.
No.
And I think most of the teams we've played haven't been that good. I mean, they've been teams that are well organised, like Huddersfield, Brentford. But we're not looking at, you know, the mythology is the Championship's a hard slog and it's a difficult league. It's harder than the Premier League, etc., etc. But the Premier League has six or seven decent teams. Championship, it's all very average. And if you can get your shit together, which Villa are a long way away from, you know, you can do damage and you can get up there. And if you're not on the ball, you know, Newcastle aren't firing on all cylinders at the moment, but they're only 4 points off the top. And they've lost three games. I mean, they've lost a third of the games, but they're still, you know, in a decent position. And that's how I would envisage Villa in this league. If they're not at the races yet, they still should be, you know, 8th, 7th, 6th, etc.
Definitely, I would agree with Anne. You only have to look at the points that we've dropped from our winning positions so far this season. We spoke about it in the last podcast. We've just been talking about players, we've got the personnel, we've got starting to get the resources together to actually build some momentum in this division. But you look at the one person who I don't think is building any momentum, and it's the lack of charisma from the manager for me. You know, I think we were set up badly today. And if you were to look at, I'm not a huge fan of Benitez, but he was visible, he was organising things. And that's the one thing that I thought about Newcastle in the first half, that the glaring thing is they were really well organised. And they might not be very good, but they were good at what they were trying to do. What were we trying to do would be my question. Five across the back, or was it three at the back with wing backs? And what the hell were we trying to achieve with that? The midfield might as well not been there. And, you know, we'll probably talk about individual performances at length, but, you know, it made Jedinak and Westwood had as bad a game. You know, again, not a huge fan of Westwood, but if you needed any more evidence, he wasn't helped out today by the fact that the game passed him by. And I do think that tactically that's where a lot of the problems lie.
I'm still subconsciously trying to work out why did he play Adoma as a wing back when one of the things that Middlesbrough fans, they said about his weaknesses was he wasn't the greatest person in terms of tracking back and defending. Mm-hmm. But Kuna's getting better at that, I feel, but his delivery's still terrible. So yeah. Why swap them around? Why play an out-and-out winger, a forward, essentially right back?
I don't know what to say to you, to be honest. I couldn't work out, you know, we saw how they lined up and then it wasn't long, it was probably 10 minutes before I think everyone in the ground knew this isn't working. And I couldn't understand how 5 minutes past, 10 minutes past, 20 minutes past, how our manager didn't see that. And the players aren't stupid, they've got to be looking at the team sheet. And I think when we'll talk about the second half and how the game progressed, I think individuals took it upon themselves to say, screw this, I'm going to play as an individual to try and actually make something happen in this game. Because where was our momentum going to come, and where was our, we lacked any fluidity to our play, because We have people playing roles that they're not accustomed, not trained, they haven't been developed to do. Kodjo being out wide as well, it's a head scratcher.
He brings on Gusted, which is an obvious move. Mm-hmm. Who's he take off? The guy who's going to whip in the crosses for him or be his supply line?
Baffling.
Which just didn't make any sense at all. I mean, Bakuna went to right back where he should have been in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I thought you're chasing the game, you're 1-0 down, you've offered absolutely nothing. Just put two up top, get some width, and just have a go.
And that was also removing Adoma at a point where you then had the opportunity to reshuffle the pack, put him into his natural wide position, and allow him to threaten. And you've also, as you just said, you've brought on Gusted, who is, you know, if he's renowned for anything, it's certainly his heading ability. I thought Gusted came on and played well, to be honest. I thought he was a real handful, but almost like we nullify ourselves, don't we?
Because pushing out Kodja right out to the flank was essentially, well, you know, why are we cutting off one of our arms to try to salvage this? It was, some of it was dumbfounding. It's not frustration, it was anger that was permeating from the crowd. The guy next to me said he's worse than Sherwood.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of thing that sticks as well. And there's already been people who I'm sure have been, you know, they've been contacting us over Twitter. You only have to sit in the whole tender in the ground to hear people having that conversation. That's really worrying for me, because we need somebody to be leading the club and to appear to be knowing what they're doing. People are already asking questions of Di Matteo. I'm not going to sit here and say he should be chopped or, you know, we should be sacking managers and whatnot. But there are some glaring tactical issues here. Walking away from the ground, we were all wondering, well, we could have actually won that. How didn't we win that? But what? Yeah, that's confined to 5 minutes, 10 minutes most, where we, as I say, individual players thought, you know what, Newcastle actually aren't that good. Screw whatever game plan, because not that I believe there's much of a game plan. And they went at Newcastle, because what they remembered was Kieran bloody Clark's at the heart of that defence.
To be fair to him, he had a decent game, mate.
He was solid, but, you know, the goalkeeper was allegedly a goalkeeper for them. You know, so bad that he's had to, from the stick he's had on Twitter, had to delete his account tonight, you know. And yet it took us 85 minutes to work out that he was rubbish.
The upshot is, we got a point tonight, despite Di Matteo's attempts. And I mean, I'll put it out there now. If we don't get promotion, which is the aim here, we're not mincing around and saying, oh, it's a 2-year plan. There's a certain guy in China who's all about getting promoted this season, and he supplied the manager with the tools to do the job, pretty much. Mm-hmm. There's obviously going to be more to come in January. But if we don't get promoted, it's on the shoulders of one man, judging on what we've seen so far in the first 9 games.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about Ashley Westwood. I'm talking about Di Matteo. Just clear that one up.
It's so frustrating, because we can see the threat that we carry. And today was a perfect example where you think, did we come out not to lose? And if so, was that formation going to achieve that? I'd love to be a fly on the wall for the team talk as well, because individual players, you know, Jedinak, I'd love to know what Di Matteo or the coaching staff said, this is your job today, because he was all over the place. His distribution was shocking. He didn't seem to know where he was supposed to be. Westwood was, as I said, Westwood was just criminally bad. And he's also reached that height as well where you get sarcastically clapped off a pitch. You know, that's gotta hurt any professional footballer.
We can sit here all day and knock Westwood, but I think the upshot is he's not good enough.
Absolutely.
And when you've got a midfield with him and Bakuna in it, I mean, we've seen it before. There's a reason why we got bloody relegated. They're just not a physical presence. They haven't got the nous. And, you know, they're not players who drive this team forward. They're not players that dominate the midfield. So why keep picking them? I mean, I have a feeling Tish Bowler could have played the full 90. And let's get a bit positive now.
I thought
Tish Bowler was, and probably jumping the gun here, because I was going to throw him in one of the reasons to be cheerful this week. But he looked good. If he stays fit and he gets more confident and he decides that I am the Don of this midfield, then we could be onto something here, and he could be a real big player.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really like him. I think Chad said last week that when we comfortably beat Rotherham, that he was the driving force for that. The second he came onto the pitch, the game changed. And it gave Newcastle something to think about, because he was not just positive, but he carries the ball into that final third and he's looking for the pass, he's looking for the run on. There was the 1-2s. He's also quite similar to Ayew as well. He can be so close to an opposition player and yet they can't get the ball off him. So he makes passes where you think, maybe where a Westwood or a Bakuna would lose the ball. He releases the ball, he's clever, he's out wide, he's central. I'm increasingly impressed with him. We haven't seen a lot of him, and I think that this is the knock-on from him being injured, that he's such a huge loss.
We're shouting the praises of a player that's, what, he's played a matter of minutes.
Yeah,
so
that
shows you how desperate we are as Villa fans. But I mean, his awareness is great. I mean, did you see the dummy where he just stepped over the ball and let it go through?
Yeah,
I think it was through to Codger. I mean, that was great.
When I caught his interview with, it might have been WM, I think, on the way home. And I think you mentioned that when he gets more confidence, he's, you know, he wasn't a man of very many words in the interview, but you get the impression that I like to, the thing I'm desperately grasping for here is that what's gone before at Villa, we need to draw a line. And he sounded like a confident, very straightforward individual who, you know, the wins will come. I enjoy playing football and I'll be part of that, rather than, well, we weren't very good or maybe we could improve here and there. You know, very forthright with his views. And you can see that in his game today, that he came onto the pitch and he tried to make something happen. That's the point of football, after all, isn't it? It's not to come on and pass sideways. And, you know, it's exciting and you could lose 5-0, but if you try and if you give everything and if you can say, well, do you know what? They bust a gut for it. No one will care. No one will care.
And I think that's what, as we alluded to earlier on, that's what Codger and AU just thought. They just thought, fuck this, got to do something here. They beat three or four players and you think, this is a miracle. You know, great, great stuff. And where is the support? The guy that, after they've made something happen that makes it continue to happen, rather than just sitting there or jogging behind and just watching in awe of whatever they're doing, they've got to switch on and you know, join in with them and help them out. Because some of these players are doing great things in isolation, but it's a team game, and unless you're in the 18-yard box and you're beating two or three players, then you probably get a shot on goal. But, you know, we're doing a lot of the good stuff's deep and they need, you know, they're crying out for help.
AU's the obvious example, isn't he? People seem to sit in two camps, don't they, of being so frustrated with him that they can't stand the bloke, or a feeling that he's just dreadfully unlucky and actually he's one of our best players. I have to say, I do probably fall into the latter camp. I think he's supremely talented, but I also wonder whether he's so scarred from actually having such dross around him, especially at Villa, that, you know, why wouldn't you try and go it alone every single time? Let's just take today. Look at the move where he cuts across the front and he curls the ball and strikes the face of the post. That was all him. There was not a great deal of anyone else there. And he's got something about him, AU, that makes me think that if we can support him, I think that's perhaps what you're getting at, if we can put good players around him who are confident and who maybe he can even look up to and think, do you know what, I will release the ball to you because you're not absolutely bloody hopeless and you won't pass it backwards or lose it.
I mean, he is a maverick, and if you're putting close-knit first 11 together, probably you're not going to pick him. He's going to be more of an impact player, but, you know, he's one of the best that we've got. So, I mean, to be fair, if you look at the link players that would bring it all this together, potentially, we're looking at Grealish, McCormack, and obviously they were missing today.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. September 19th. We are clear about issues. I have asked all to support, including pointing out coach's team's weakness and try different ways to fix for now. Be positive. September 19th. I understood all your feeling and desperation to up the Villa. We need more to stand together and calm down to solve all problems before the dawn coming. September 21st. I've always listened to all advice, but I've never bothered by what people said. Do what you should do. Adjust what you should make. Changes. Be yourself. September 21st. At Jack Grealish. As I said before, focus every minute on and off pitch. Choose the right type of people to be with. Don't let people who trust you down. OTV.
We were going to start the show with three or four newsy things to kind of warm up, but, you know, we had to go straight into this game because, it was shite, man.
It's one of the strangest games of football that I've walked away from in a while. But like everyone, at half time, I think I needed either restraining or removing from the ground because I couldn't interpret what I'd seen, really. And then as the second half went on, it looked inevitable that Newcastle were going to win. And then it's like a switch went off, didn't it, again? And some players, some of our players, Ayews and Codgers and just sort of, and Tish Bowlers took the game by the scruff of the neck. But we get the goal. I mean, we had the disallowed goal. We kitchen sink them for 10 or 15 minutes where we could have won. And it almost masked what had gone before it. And I wonder whether the underlying theme, though maybe not similar in terms of all the other games, is that have we not won those games because of this glaring tactical shortcoming? And it's so early into Di Matteo's reign that it's easy to say, you know, we're still learning, players are still gelling. There's a little bit of that, but let's do the simple things right.
You know, let's look on the bright side. That point, I mean, we need more than a point at the moment, but I think a lot of people were happy after that. I mean, everybody was singing on the way back to Aston Station or, you know, the social before leaving. And it was buoyant. I hadn't seen that for a long time. It was like we'd qualified for Wembley or something. But I think it was more like we got some self-respect back because, you know, we were standing there as supporters with our bloody pants around our ankles. Newcastle fans were rightly taking the piss because I don't think they could believe we were that bad.
It's a weird one. This could be the making of the club in the sense that maybe it'll galvanise us, and that's a fantastic thing. I don't understand. I don't if the rationale was to play like that in order to achieve it. Well, yeah, maybe that's something we need to go through.
No, that's something out of Sherwood's tactics. Well, I think it's the Blues where he said he was going to play for 60 minutes, like poor, just to lure them into a false sense of security.
Well, we did beat them.
It's potentially a pivotal point because they're going to go Tuesday now to Barnsley in terms of player confidence, it can only do them good. But what we have to hope is A. McCormack or Grealish are back, and also Di Matteo learns the error of his ways and gets rid of this 3-5-2 nonsense. Well, essentially the three at the back, because I'm sorry, but those three... When you play two centre-backs, they're pretty well-drilled and they know their responsibilities because it's, you know, it's essentially on the shoulder of two players and you're looking after the right and left of the centre of defence. When you've got three, there's suddenly a few grey areas. It's like, whose responsibility is this guy who's running kind of in between, let's say, the left and the centre-back? And it becomes, this grey area causes weakness while two centre-backs, they know their roles better. So I think that's the way to go because we're just losing a player up field who we need, essentially.
We were overrun in the midfield, weren't we, the first half. The crazy thing in the beginning of the second half, I was surprised to see that Baker was the four guy in the reshuffle. I can understand why it happened, but I thought on the basis of how Elphick had one of the worst centre-half showings I can remember seeing, maybe as a result of the uncertainty that's brought about by a three and the exposure on the right and left, it was interesting how many times that, I mean, Baker's not particularly cultured, but he was covering for Elphick's lack of positional sense, if you like. And Chester as well. Chester came to the rescue of Alfie more than one occasion in the first half. I don't think necessarily there's much to read into all of that, but it serves to illustrate that 3-5-2 was, it's not something I'd want to see again in a hurry, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think Elphick and Chester are good enough for this league. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily have them as the centre back pairing for the Premier League if we ever get back there. But but that's another story. But let's go back to the decision to drop Grealish.
Yeah, I'm listening to Cool Cauliflower. Come on.
We've had a letter this week from a concerned parent. It reads like this. Our little and Jack, he's been messing around. This ain't the first time. This time is the final straw. Please, Collie, give us some wise words. Well, this isn't the first time with our Jack now, is it? Hanging around with the wrong crowd. Take it from me, our mucker. Yeah, I'm going to ruin it for yourself. Yeah, well be able to go down the chase, as you please. Yeah, I'm famous. And what about them dreams of playing for a big club like Bradford or Real Oviedo? Yeah, can forget it. Them osses, no chance. Put your football first.
My understanding, I'm assuming from speaking to other fans who are a bit frustrated with the decision because, and I was talking to fans of Grealish's age, and because of previous games, he hasn't been able to have his is it 21st or 20th? I think it's 21st. 21st, like landmark birthday. So he's had a bit of a party. He's a week away until the next game. And there's no evidence anywhere of whatever happened. I mean, it's mainly noise pollution that the cat got out of the bag that he was actually having a party and enjoying himself. There's two sides to this. Grealish hasn't been clever because if you're going to party hard, which you're entitled to, don't go to a hotel in the middle of Birmingham. Go to your, if you're going, I mean, we're talking about after hours. This party's gone on to like 7 in the morning. Go home. Take your homies home. You can do whatever you want. Privacy of your own home. Nobody will report you, see you, dob on you, grass you up. Or go a bit further out of town. But the main thing is, if you're raging hard after like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, take it private.
Yeah.
The upshot, there's only one rule here. Don't get caught. Then there's no problem.
Don't get caught. And it says a lot. I take the view that he's just incredibly naive and a bit stupid, and he's entitled to celebrate his birthday like anyone is. But there's a slightly different angle in the sense that, one, he's a professional athlete.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And, you know, he's entitled to a personal life and to, you know, ultimately his body's his. But he's supposed to be in prime physical condition. He's employed to be in that state. Now, it's a week before a game. But do you see and do you hear of other top up-and-coming footballers doing the same thing as regularly as Greek? Is it that they're caught? Is it that they're caught or they're not?
I was just about to say that. That's the golden rule.
That's the golden rule. That's the golden rule.
Villa players, very bad track record in terms of getting caught. I mean, I was actually thinking about doing this podcast and website. My old man said the party agent, where we sort out parties for football players where nobody gets caught.
Well, I think you'd certainly have one client straight away in
I think there'll be a queue, actually.
I'm not going to get so hung up on it. I think that the thing is, for me, that I do like to think that as a professional athlete, he would be looking after himself. And also the social circle as well. Who's he got in his social circle? Who is letting the cat out of the bag?
Yeah, but in this incident, that was the cat out of the bag was the noise, essentially, and your fellow hotel residents. So it's kind of a no-brainer.
Well, I think that is the point. It's no-brain. And do I want to be prophet of doom here? Because there was a fantastic footballer who came through when I first started watching the Villa, who had all of the technical attributes, very similar player, exciting, in and around the periphery of the England squad, came to nothing. And the thing is, Lee Hendry must look back on his career, and he's much maligned now. He's a joke. It's a joke, isn't it, that he's known for the party boy stuff and not for actually what he could have become. What he could have become. And there was that open letter, if you like, from Collie Moore. How many times do we need to see that sort of diatribe?
Well, this is one of the things about getting caught is suddenly you get all these ex-player pundits who have done far, far, far worse in their back catalogue of misdemeanours. And, you know, I'm just talking even just from the point of just drinking, because it used to be a drinking culture, football. Absolutely. And you've got, you know, I'm not talking just about Collymore, talking about all, there's like a whole, you know, Mr. Hotel Sex Orgy Dwight York comes out with his fatherly advice.
Holier than thou advice, yes.
They're queuing up because they want to be in the limelight and they've got agendas within the media. And it, Collymore, what he says is all, you know, it's perfectly correct. But whether these people should queue up and say all these things, I mean, it's the nature of the beast now. Football media is, it's relentless. But golden rule, you don't get caught. You don't have to go through all this shit.
Yeah.
You know, as Collymore did rightly point out, and it's kind of an elaboration of what you said about Lee Hendry. You said, you know, there's two paths, there's the Gareth Barry and Lee Hendry. And of course, there's, you know, there's more than that, because it's not that clean cut. You don't have to be boring or a party boy. It's just be wise. Because, you know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt here. And he had two drinks, let's say. There's no big deal here. So anyway, enough of that. Would you have dropped him? Is a fine enough? So far this season, he's got to be one of the top five performers for Villa so far.
Well, we've seen glimpses of Grealish. Has he been so on fire as to say, do you know what, we can turn a blind eye to things? I don't think we even necessarily should as a club either. That, don't forget, we've fallen foul of perhaps not properly addressing these sort of in-house issues. Agbonlahor is a great example. There was issues where, you know, all last season, you know, the day we got relegated, another hotel incident, you know, him and Richards disappearing to Dubai mid-season when we were, you know, on our knees, and countless other examples. You know, you mentioned the York one going further back. A line needs to be drawn somewhere else, because it always seems to be Villa as well. Are we a professional football club? And, you know, it's been fined a week's wages and dropped, and it's a very public, action as well, isn't it?
I think it was 2 weeks' wages.
2 weeks' wages. Well, you know, not insignificant money. Granted, the guy's already, I'm sure, a wealthy individual. But I think the point is that it's a public statement. And I would rather our youth players and our academy players and anyone joining the club goes, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do it, I need to, you know, be a bit more reserved maybe. Or, like you say, do it out of the public eye. I don't condone it, but I think that, you know, players are role models as well.
Thinking about it a little bit more, I think it was the right thing to do, mm-hmm. because it's not as if he's kind of a world beater that we can't kind of live without at the moment.
Exactly. No one's indispensable, and Grealish could be anything. Grealish could be anything he wants to, because we, you know, I always think back to that Liverpool game at Wembley. That was the stage where you thought, bloody hell, we've got a player on our hands here. And will Grealish be the player who is central to Villa rebuilding and whatever future success we might have? Or will he still be at the club in 10 years with us saying, why the bloody hell would he give him a 5-year contract? How'd we get rid of him? You know, where is it going to pan out for him?
I just want to go back to Jedinak. He had a mare of a game. And
stinker.
From watching his, I think his, how many times has he played? 3 times now? Mm-hmm. But I had from watching him, I saw him for Palace in the semi-final. That was the last time I saw him before he signed for Villa. I went to that semi-final. Don't ask me why.
why?
I said, don't ask me why. Oh. When we signed him, I thought, yeah, goodbye. Get him in, because he's a leader. He's somebody, he's going to be a bit more tenacious in the midfield, give us a bit of steel in there, and, you know, Aussie battler, et cetera, et cetera. But I've been so underwhelmed by him, and his distribution today was, it was on par. It's almost like the rest of the players' inadequacies that were rubbing off. Like, these players haven't come into the team to lift the rest of the team. They're actually picking up all the bad habits of their teammates.
Yeah, I'd say underwhelmed with Jedinak so far, which has been a real disappointment, actually. I tried to put it down to the fact that he picked up a bit of a knock and he'd been flown halfway across the world after we'd signed him, for international duty. Just taking the Newcastle game in isolation, he won the ball a lot, and that was helpful. But as you said, the distribution was let's be clear, predominantly awful. He played two or three fantastic balls into the channels, I have to say, that were interesting. You know, there was one in the first half where he he played a through ball, and in the second half where he played it, you know, quite a high crossfield ball that into the path of Amavi, I think, which was I think it shows you the potential, but he looks well off the pace at the moment, and I don't know whether that's a fitness issue, tactical issue, it could be that as well, you know, we've talked about that.
He's playing very conservative in terms of he's sticking very much to that defensive midfielder role, and I expected him to be bossing the midfield a little bit more and getting involved both sides of the halfway line.
No, he seems bolted in front of the two centre-halves, doesn't he?
Which is ironic when you're playing three centre-backs that you need somebody... Like stuck in front of them. You know, he is essentially playing as a fourth centre-back at times.
I would like to see what he starts to look like if we could get Tshibola fit for a length of time. I would like to see how that midfield, you know, you talk about defensive and strike partnerships. We haven't got a midfield partnership where you go, this is core to us, this is part of our spine. I'd like to see how... I don't think we've seen enough of him yet. I really don't. He's massive. There's glimpses of quality there, but he hasn't shown it yet nearly enough.
Welcome back to Jedinak's Jangle. G'day villains, you join me live from Utopia. Aston really is a strange and unpredictable place. You'll no doubt be saddened to learn that the newborn Dilat, she didn't make it through. She's a goner. But the pride will move on. There's no time for sentiment in the outbacks of Widden. The alpha males will fight for the right back role. The Scottish Cafu, Mika defend Richards, and the unpredictable Dutch Bakuna. For all our sakes, we can only hope it's a fight to the death.
We started the last episode, The Improvers, where we take one player, at the moment it's completely random, and describe how they can improve and are they actually improving or are they a lost cause. And I think in terms of an improver, in terms of somebody who's actually demonstrated an improvement, especially from the early games of his Villa career, would have to be Mr. Gallini. Mm-hmm. I thought he had a couple of moments which, if he didn't pull off those saves, it would have been maybe 2-3, 4-0. It would have just... And a second goal, I think, would have opened the floodgates today.
Yep, I think his best game in a Villa shirt, actually. The first half was... There were so many moments of utter disarray in the penalty area, and he took command or he made the right choice. And the two saves that stick in my head, the first one was where, between the centre-halves, the ball broke to the Newcastle player. No one really decided, and he decided not to creep out of his six-yard box. He stayed put, which was really important, and made himself big, really, and made a great block. The second one was the Elphick mistake, was obviously the key moment where, well, a game-saving...
I mean, in short, it saved our bacon. It's
absolutely. Absolutely. But a crucial time of the game. If we'd have gone in at half-time 2-0, you know, not only would the bloody place have gone mental, but it would have emptied as well.
Yeah, no, I was about to say, it would have been a bit of a ghost town. My experience today of this vicious rivalry that we have with Newcastle, you know, I got off the train and the first thing that greeted me at Witten was Newcastle fans and Villa fans all mixed, having cans and having a laugh, and same after the game. It's almost like two sets of fans that have empathy with each other's situation, because essentially we're going through the same thing. Let's go back, let's say 10 years or so, when, you know, we'd look at Manchester City and Chelsea as teams that were not necessarily bigger than us in any shape or form. Fortune comes their way, and suddenly not only have they surpassed us, but they're now kicking sand in our face. And we've had owners that were quite happy for clubs of the status of Villa and Newcastle to punch below their weight until disaster eventually came. So this whole media thing of whipping up, I mean, what we've done to them in 2009, which is apparently the new 9/11, is was, you know, we're taking the piss. It could have been any team there. We'd have you know, obviously if it's a bigger team and they're going down, then, and especially a team that are kind of on your kind of, let's say, wavelength in terms of size, you're going to rejoice. I mean, I think I was on TalkSport and I said to the presenters of the sports bar, yeah, I don't understand why we really, really went to town to wind them up. And as they said back to me, they said, Dave, well, you know, football supporters, that's what we do. That's what, you know, that's what everybody does. And, you know, that's what it is. And then last year, for God's sake, we're going down. We want to take as many people down with us.
It's dark humour, isn't it?
And I think it's humour, and it, you know, it's a spice of life.
It is. I mean, no, it's like anything, really. You know, you go to the football, you vent your frustrations, you shout things you don't ordinarily shout in the street or in the comfort of your own home. Or, and then, you know, everyone goes about their business, don't they? Newcastle are funny because they were almost like the original Sky TV creation, weren't they, to try and, you know, create the myth, really. But they've since, you know, Sky move on, don't they, like a leech-like corporation to create. It's Manchester City at the moment, or next year it'll be whoever. Or And Newcastle suffered badly for it because I think it gave their fan base, I'm sorry, a portion of their fan base, unrealistic expectations, should we say.
Delusions of grandeur.
Delusions of grandeur. And I think that's the point, that's the bit that I find particularly funny, I think, is that they've never been particularly good. Like ourselves in the modern era, never been particularly good, but have almost been so surprised to be in the situation that they find themselves in, you know. Yet, you know, as I say, they have John Joe Shelvey at the heart of their midfield and by Kieran Clarke.
The Chronicle up there were whipping up a storm, you know, and the Birmingham Mail were doing the, Mickey Quinn thinks Villa fans are a bunch of wankers. And, fans' reaction to Mickey Quinn.
It's just bullshit, isn't it? It's all it is people, it's truest form. It's just banter, isn't it? And it makes a fixture that, probably the biggest fixture in the Championship without all that rubbish around it, to be honest. But
yeah. It
adds a bit of spice, doesn't it? Adds a bit of...
I suppose it's like the hype before, like, boxing matches.
Yeah, it's I don't know what they call it. It's that sort of crap talk, isn't it? That
I think it's called marketing.
Yeah, well, I don't mind that. I don't think it's rivalry in the true sense. You know, I don't wake up on like I do on Derby morning and think, you know, this is a do or die. And I imagine that you look in the mirror and there's a Newcastle fan looking back at you. I don't think that they would wake up particularly and have Aston Villa circled necessarily. I think, yeah, that there's karma in football. And I think if they had the opportunity to relegate us, that would be party time on Tyneside.
Villa have been in the right place at the right time when it comes to Newcastle. I think that's the bottom. I mean, I enjoy it because, you know, the modern day game so sanitized that to have these little rivalries, it's a bit of extra spice. But I think in terms of being decent football fans, I mean, Geordies and, you know, Villains are kind of peas of a pod from that kind of respect. So any ill will or hatred, I mean, some fans kind of get caught up because they're essentially brainwashed by the media. Anyway, let's move on to what's been happening in the rest of the Championship. And it's almost like they're digging a little secret tunnel to the top of the league where nobody has noticed them. And Norwich have finally reached the summit.
Well, 3 points clear of third place Brighton as well. In our first or second podcast, the very, very beginning of the season, we spoke about Norwich being the team that had been relegated. They hadn't added significantly, and I think it openly stated that their business was pretty much done very early on. Yeah. Robust, broadly a Premier League football. You know, you look across the squad, and I think I said something to the tune that we would probably quite happily take a number of their players given the chance. Well-run football club.
But they're a team. I mean...
That was exactly what I was about to say. They're a team and they know this league and are going about their work rather diligently. You know, they are now, what, 11 points clear of us? Well, 6 wins to our 1. And considering the firepower we bought, they've scored 7 more goals than us.
I mean, Reading in 4th, I mean, what's that all about? I thought they were in the bottom 4, never mind the top 4.
Yeah, they're quietly going about their work as well. As are the Blues and Barnsley, really. I mean, we're obviously facing Barnsley. These are the types of teams that they're on the points totals that we would have imagined that we would be on. You know, the 15, sort of 14, 15, 16 points. Maybe not, not running away. I don't think anyone had any.
I think we would have been expected to be on those points while still in transition. We'd be saying, well, you know, we're still finding our feet here. That's why we're only on 16 points after 9 games.
And so that's a bit of a puzzle. And perhaps, I mean, I said last week that, you know, this is a winning league. We seem to be the draw specialists. You know, you only have to look at our stats. That's basically what it is.
As a Blues fan said on Twitter earlier on, they've actually got more points than Villa and Derby combined. And he went on to explain that shows you what decent management and organisation is compared to just throwing money at something, which I think is a fair point, to be honest.
Well, at this stage, definitely. Gary Rowett's the never-ending whisper, isn't it, really, of the will Villa inevitably revisit the McLeish moment of, you know, some point in the future and go, well, Gary Rowett's a bit of all right, isn't he? So
he's a Villa fan.
He's a big Villa fan. And the thing about Rowett is he's done a damn good job at Blues with, you know, he's gone through a period as well where he had next to no money.
Yeah, they spent fuck all, didn't they?
You know, and again, that they sit in that cluster of teams. Yeah, it's only not. I keep saying 9 games, but it's, you know, we're... I consider us into the season now. A fifth of the season gone? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Something like that? That sort of leads us to Barnsley, doesn't it? Who sit sandwiched between Blues and Wolves at the moment. They've won five games. They've won five. We've won one. And
they've scored 19
goals. They've let 13 in, by the way.
Yeah, but if you score 19 goals, it doesn't matter.
That's the thing with football. It's all statistics to you, isn't it, David?
Listen. One statistic in football, if you score more goals than the opposition, you tend to win. I'll put my hand up. I don't know anything about Barnsley in terms of their players and who's responsible for all these goals. I mean, do you know off the top of your head?
No.
listener, if you're a Barnsley expert, send us a tweet on @ Aston Villa Pod and give us an insight into Barnsley's success story. But Barnsley are all or nothing, 5 wins, 4 losses, no draws. Looking at, we've got the next 2 games are 2 away games. If this is a turning point, and I use that word, those words half-heartedly, let's say. If there is a knock-on effect, say that this boosted confidence and it's galvanised the players and Di Matteo's realised the errors of his way, how many points would you think we should be getting from those 2 away fixtures? Do you want me to give you a clue? 4.
Okay. Is it just me at this point where I think that we've got to be going into games looking to win? I feel we've lost ground at the moment.
Let's do our normal closer. 5 reasons to be cheerful as Aston Villa fans. Number one, I'll give it to you, Mr. Dan.
I say coming from behind against arguably one of the better teams in the division. You know, we looked devoid of ideas for most of the game, dead and buried. But then,
true,
we, you know, equally left wondering how did we not win the fixture in the end? A nice little drive home for the Geordies as well, just to, you know, because that's a nice little story for the local press to wind them up for next season. At least they weren't relegated this time.
Yeah, no, that's if you're a Newcastle fan, that is a reason to be cheerful. You didn't actually get relegated after visiting Villa Park.
Well
this time.
Done, well done. Very well done.
Although, let's put it this way, it was only the fixture list that you got lucky with there. I'm sure if it was the last game of the season, you would have been relegated again. Anyway, moving on, number 2, we've already paid homage to him, but I'm going to go number 2, the impact of Tish Bowler, who I actually called. I said to the gentleman beside me at halftime, I said, Baker's coming off, Tish Bowler's coming on. And as if my seat was mic'd, it actually happened. But I thought he was good. We've discussed him, but some neat touches, awareness, not afraid to try things as well. And obviously scored the equaliser.
Really good play. Really good play.
So talking about scoring in front of the whole 10, what was your take on the offside? Because I was up celebrating and I turned around and I just looked at a wall, just rows of people sat down. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, something's not right here. Was it offside? We haven't seen it back since. Somebody said there was a couple of Villa players offside, so yeah. We'll go with that.
Yeah, a bit disappointing, I suppose, in those sort of situations. You wonder how you managed to get offside from that dead ball, but shoulda, woulda, coulda.
So, number 3.
Just a link to what we were saying earlier on about Grealish. I think if there's one good thing is that the club have dealt with it really quickly, professionally. They fined him. They dropped him. No great song or dance, really, from the club. And, you know, aside from the good old doctor addressing it personally over Twitter by public message.
What do you think about that? Because obviously you mention his tweets a lot.
Oh, here's something to think about. My dad said it to me today, actually. He said, what if your employer took offence to something that you did and then tweeted you over Twitter to ask you about it and tell you, please don't do that again? How would that? I think, what the bloody... It's a bit odd, but I think all of this is a bit odd. So
now you put it like that. Surely that's kind of one for constructive, kind of almost realms of constructive dismissal employment law, that to be that publicly open. if I was an established player and a bit of a big shot, I would be just having a little phone call to my lawyer, maybe.
Yeah, I think anyone would. And strip it right back, and I'll go back to what I just said. If it was a work-type relationship and your boss did that to you or to any other employee, really, you can imagine it would raise a few eyebrows. I wonder whether it raises a few eyebrows within Villa's own HR department. Maybe they've got a little light that just goes, oh, shit, he's tweeted again. You know, the little, I don't know, the Hercules the Lion light goes up across Birmingham and someone swoops in to try and disable his iPhone.
That would be funny, actually, if there is a big light in the corridors, well, in the offices of Villa Park, that every time he tweets, this big red light starts to flash.
Who would you beam into Birmingham's skyline? Who would you? What would you have as the emblem? So, you know, Batman in Gotham City. What would you?
Well, I think it'd just be a big Chinese flag. The Chinese flag on the top of the Doug Ellis stand starts to light up every...
The Chairman Mao stand, do you mean?
Yeah, sorry, the Chairman Mao stand.
Ah, yes.
I forgot it got changed. I don't think the Birmingham Mail have broke that story yet. Shit, we've broken the embargo, but I think it's Wednesday they announced it's going to be called the Chairman Mao stand. So the fifth and final one, I'm going for the... I must admit, after 60 minutes, I thought it was game over for the unbeaten home record, for what it's worth at the moment. Also, the second game on the trot, we haven't conceded a late goal in 5 minutes. I mean, that would have been some sucker punch. We were resurrected from the dead, and then they hit us on the break, and they scored in the last minute. I mean, that would have been...
Oh, that would have been grief. And those Geordies would have loved that. Absolutely. Oh, yes. I would have been like Christmas.
Here I am saying they're a good bunch, and you're just refusing to believe that and sticking the needle in at every opportunity.
That's what I'm here for. To add balance.
Exactly, to the force. If you have any questions, or if you want something discussing, or if you have any great ideas to improve the podcast, drop us a line on the dedicated Twitter address, which is @AstonVillaPod. And of course, if you've got to the end of the show, well done. First of all. Secondly, if you just give us a thumbs up or show us some love or rate it 5 stars, please. And then if you hated it, just give it a real bashing in the review, but just say 5 stars. But that's good. It just gives us an indication that you're listening and enjoying it and making these... what time is it now? It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning. Pretty standard for this podcast.
It's early.
It's early. We could go on, but let's stop it here, shall we? Have a good week, and until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Did you see the game the other...
I'm still high.
What a goal that last goal was.
Well, when Les got equalised... It was typical Villa. That was when the top four are starting to float away. But when he scored, it's like, maybe this season we can keep going.
But that goal, how well did he take that last
fantastic.
Goal? Under that kind of pressure, like 30 seconds after he'd scored, it was really amazing.
Yeah, no, and I think now he'll be in the England team regular now.
No, it was a great game. Amazing.
No, I think I came from Paris this morning. I'd probably miss my plane if it was too warm. Just through depression, but I had an extra spring in my step to get here.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.